Okay, welcome Will Bartholomew of D1 Training, correct?
D1 Training, that's
D1 it. D1 Training, which, guys, if you've not seen these facilities, they are, you must put a lot of intention into how you design these facilities.
It's just racks and turf. That's it.
But the turf is unique because it's a lot of turf.
Yeah, it is a lot of turf.
And guys, D1 Training, Will, if you could throw up the website, because you guys actually focus a lot on mobility and agility as well, which most trainers don't do these days.
Yeah, man, I think I took my experience at the University of Tennessee and, you know, really wanted to translate that Division I workout. And so we have five parts to the workout: a dynamic warm-up, performance, strength, core and conditioning. And then, of course, a great breakdown at the end of a great workout. But
the branding is strong, too.
Thank you.
I mean, the red and the white and the black, definitely your branding guidelines are, it's noticeable.
Aggressive.
It's aggressive. Yeah.
Somewhere where you know you're a high school, middle school kid, you want to, hey, that's the place you're going to go get better. That's the place.
Those are very interesting stats right there. 100 plus NFL draft picks.
Yeah.
1,000 professional athletes, 3,000 collegiate athletes, 100,000 scholastics per year, and then 2 million people served overall. Good numbers.
It's amazing what you can do over time. We've been around for a while.
Well, let's dig in, because I want to get to your background, because there's a lot of questions that I want to sort of find the parallels between younger you as a top-level athlete and now father in the business side. But born and raised in Tennessee, did I read All-State honors in high school in three different sports?
Yeah, something like, you know, so I was fortunate enough to be on a great football team and be All-State and get recruited, and then I was a wrestler, so I was an All-State wrestler, I was a shot, but I was just a thrower and a lifter in the spring, I was All-State because I got second place in every meet I was in, because a guy on my team set the, you know, like, no every kidding. Record, so I always got second, but I got All-State honors, you know.
So, football, wrestling, track.
Yep, that's it.
What was your favorite?
Oh, I mean, I love football. I mean, I know where you might be going with this, which is, like, I probably learned the most out of wrestling about myself. Yes. But yeah, I got a lot of good wrestling stories.
Funny enough, and we had John Welborn on, who we were discussing earlier. I just watched Vision Quest.
Oh, again, it's the only wrestling movie out there.
1985.
Yeah.
I mean, the classic.
When he's lunging with the logs up the bleachers, it's the best scene ever.
That's the scene that John brought up. And we're like, hey, Will, have you seen Vision Quest? Because, Will, you were born in 91? And the answer was no. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to make it mandatory in the office to watch this thing. Best film ever. So University of Tennessee scholarship, I mean, were they recruiting you senior year?
They were, yeah. I took five official visits, came down here to Texas, went and visited Rice. I went to a school in Nashville called MBA. It's a all-boys military background. It's not a military school, but all-boys school. And really, when I was coming out, my parents, really my grandmother, she was just on me, like, hey, use sports to get into a great school, great education, and really focused on that education. And so I went Rice, Wake Forest, Vanderbilt, Virginia, and Tennessee. Mm.
Easy choice, or were you torn between?
I mean, when I saw the girls at Tennessee, easy choice after an all boys school. No, yeah. No. I mean, it was an easy choice. I mean, I definitely, you know, it was enticing when Rice is telling you that they're going to give the ball to you every time. I was a fullback, so they're like, you know, I'm running the ball, but I'm not really running the ball. And he was like telling me I was going to be the leading, you know, rusher in the country if you come here. You know, we're going to give you the ball every play. And, you know, instead I was just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to Tennessee and just hit defensive ends and linebackers. But, yeah, no, it was an easy choice. I mean, at the time, Tennessee was – Peyton had just decided to come back for a senior year. I had a lot of connections up there. My grandfather had played there. So there was definitely something in my spirit saying that's where I needed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great school. And they were awesome back then.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I was fortunate, you know, I got to play. So I got there, got to play with Peyton Manning. 98, we ended up winning it. Got to be the fullback on that team. Met my wife there. We got married right after that national championship.
And, in what year in college is that for you?
That's my redshirt freshman year, so my second year, sophomore year.
How was being married in college? That actually helped you focus?
Man, it did.
Some of the, I'll say the BS.
Yeah, it eliminates distractions, you know? It's amazing if you cut out all the BS, how much you can accomplish. I mean, I was an undersized white boy from Nashville, Tennessee, from a prep school going to University of Tennessee. When I showed up, I was like, man, I just hope I get on the field, you know, run down on kickoff, much less start. And so I got to earn the starting spot there and got to be a captain of the team. And, man, it just being married, you know, I don't know if that would have happened. I'd probably been just chasing girls and just drinking, being an idiot, drinking partying. And partying yeah. and all that. I didn't drink, though. I didn't drink all through college.
Would have been something like the movie The Program, which is also a classic.
Yeah, yeah. I don't Latimer. Know if I would go straight Latimer style. But in the weight room, I might have been like that. He's definitely the hero of every, like, dude in the weight room. Like, let's just go throw some weight around and scream.
Without a doubt. It was almost Bosworth-esque. I don't know if they took Bosworth as sort of the image for that role. I mean, national championship, that had to be especially in your freshman year, that's a hard one to top for the rest of your college career. But you did start as fullback 3 years.
I did, yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, you learn so much from those championship years and just the players and the people you're around. And I still use it today in business. I mean, the type of leaders that a guy like Al Wilson was and how he could just, with his will, like, get you to, like, do more than you thought you could. That's true leadership. And so I just, man, I take so much from those years and just very grateful that I was on that team.
You know, I've got this theory, and it's based off one guy, a guy named Bill Campbell. I don't know if you ever heard that name. He was known as the secret coach of Silicon Valley.
Okay.
Pennsylvania coal mining town, played football at an Ivy League school, then was assistant coach at Boston College and head coach at Brown, but he made the decision to leave as a coach in the NCAA and go into business. Started with Kodak, then made it into Apple, was the head of the board for Apple and also the CEO of Intuit, but
wow,
was unlike any leader in Silicon Valley because he actually had, I'm trying to be politically correct here and not crush my hometown, balls. he had this gravitas about him. He was still very much a coach, but he was by far the most recognized and strongest leader in Silicon Valley, hence why Steve Jobs and Sergey Brin and all these top CEOs came to him for guidance and counseling. Man, I think NFL coaches, NCAA coaches, would crush it in the business world if they took these Fortune 500 CEO spots and just lead with character and build teams that we just don't see in the corporate sector today.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I know for me, as I've built the business, like through football and through my upbringing, I had some natural just way of life, of way I've carried myself, make decisions, driven, some of these characteristics that can push through. I think the harder thing, and I have a bunch of friends that are in coaching, and it's like when you want to transition to the business world, the harder thing, I think, is when you get kind of further in life is to, like, humble yourself to go back and learn the skill and learn, like, okay, I don't know anything about sales. I can't just read a book. I actually got to go sell something. Like, and I think that's really hard for people to do, and I'm definitely not perfect in this, but I pride myself in every year trying to learn skills that I haven't mastered around business, whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's operations, and constantly trying to drop that in. And then, but you got to go still do the work. You got to, like, get in there and, like, go do it. You can't just read about it.
And I think that's true for anything. Somebody who's spent a majority of their life in sales, if they ascend to a leadership position, then have to learn all the sort of functions, or at least know how they operate. That's and how right. he can employ them as a, or he or she employs them as a leader. But what I love, and maybe where I'm going with this, is what are the parallels you learned from sports? And I'm an advocate for all kids being in sports. I was the kid that sucked at everything.
Yeah.
Literally.
I doubt but that. I bet you were tough.
I was tough, but when it comes to a sort of coordination standpoint, you throw the ball to me, it's most likely breaking my nose. If it's right on point, if Peyton's throwing it. But it's you learn.
I can tell that story. He did that. Oh, he did. To me.
No kidding.
Didn't break it, but
did Peyton put stank on the ball? Did he have
it was a rifle.
How was he as a person? I've heard amazing things.
He's awesome.
I've heard people all say, yeah, he's pretty insular. He's very outgoing. I always remember those SNL skits he did, which were freaking hilarious. I
mean, he is a master at this. He can turn it on and turn it off depending on the situation and what he needs. We could go from hanging out at the bar and talking and just kind of, shooting the bull and to being in the huddle and him looking at me and saying, hey, if you don't catch this pass, I'm never throwing to you again. That's hard to do to, a friend and a peer. So I think those are the things you have to do. You have to have hard conversations.
Yeah. But back to the point.
Yeah.
What are the parallels that you find between sports and business? Because, business leaders pick up books about Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. And they often always go to sports, and quite frankly, they also go to war with great military leaders like Patton and the General McChrystals, the Admiral McRavens. What are those things that you sort of brought, those paradigms that we both know don't exist within traditional private sector businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things that kind of pop in my brain, which are, one, I always try to be the leader that I wish I had. And so I had a coach that was super sarcastic to me and would never shoot me straight. And I'd be like, man, I'm never going to be that. I'm never going to be super sarcastic. Like, I like to have, some fun and a little banter, but like, hey, if we're talking, like, I'm going to be direct and tell you what I think.
In a professional and tactful,
in a professional way. Yeah. And I think the second thing is, culture over everything. Culture is just really having that defined and then beating that drum constantly. It's amazing how the culture can break through a belief system that people walk in with. It's amazing how they can break through not just goals and accomplishments, but just like change the way they are and who they are. And so I think culture over everything. And, the last thing is, I like to use the word service. I like to have a servant's mindset. And I think when you look at great coaches, I'm in the business of coaching. And so at the end of the day, I do not exist except for the, thousands of athletes out there training today and being coached at a D1. And as long as I keep that mindset, is that I'm there to serve them first. That is why we're here. That's why D1 exists. That's why my job exists. And so it's constantly serving them, which is interesting because at coaching, at the end of the day, you're supposed to have all the answers, right? Like, you're supposed to give them the direction but it's all for their greater good, which is a servant, is giving them the way for them to reach the goal, not you.
I'm sure you know who Peter Drucker is. He was the famous,
yeah,
the Jordan Peterson,
yeah,
back then, Jordan Peterson of our time. He said, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Yep, all the time.
You can have the best plan in the world if you don't have the culture and the people to execute upon it. You know, servant mindset is one of those things that's thrown out there all the time. There was a great general, and funny enough, he now leads the John Doerr Leadership Development Institute at Rice, and I'm blanking on his name. It'll come to me, General Tom Colditz.
Okay.
And he defined servant leadership, and I found this just as the one I go with. But he said it's turning the compliant into the willing. And that's how he defined
that's great.
Servant mindset. But he also touched on how accountability and enforcing accountability is is so vital to that servant mindset. And people are like, you know, this is sounding less like a servant and more like a tyrant. And you know, where he was going with it is like the highest form of leadership is love. And the highest form of love is accountability, not as an external punishment force, but right. teaching those below you or younger than you on the right way to do things and holding them to that standard so that when you're gone, you've armed them for success and to weather tough times. And yeah, I found that.
That's good.
Yeah, I found that sort of redefining, because everyone loves to, you know, we get these buzzwords. It's like the new orange. DE&I, servant leadership, transformational, you know, thought leader, but nobody has a really good definition on them.
I think when you said the word standard right there, which I'll go back to my story of coaches. I had a great coach at the University of Tennessee, a guy named Philip Fulmer. And one of the things he did when I was captain of the team there is he said, guys, I want you to run this team. Here are the standards. Here are the agreements. I'll use another word, agreements that we're going to make. And all within those agreements, we were able to go, right? Like we were able to lead the team, do what we thought best, call a players only meeting, which we did a couple of times.
How many captains? It was you.
There's four of us.
Four of you.
Yeah.
And so, offense, defense.
Yeah. Two offense, two defense.
Okay.
And I just think agreements and standards, as long as they're clarified, that is ultimately how you hold people accountable in a servant way. Because it's like, you said you wanted to reach this goal. I'm holding you accountable to reach the goal. Are you wanting to change it now? Are you getting frustrated with me because you wanted to change it? My wife and I didn't share anything about my family. I've been married 25 years, so I got married in college. But coming up on 25 here in a couple months.
And well done. Congrats.
Thank you. Well, she put up with me. I'm wild and crazy. I'm a fullback
you
wrestler
don't
say. who's an entrepreneur who likes to do crazy stuff. But like, I think one of the things that's, she would say this if she was sitting here is, you know, we have really good agreements. And when we don't, we discuss them. And that is what has helped us last through all the years. And so, I mean, we've definitely had our ups and downs. And so you, I think it's just like anything you're building. If you want it to be great, you got to have that. You got to have those agreements. You got to have that servant mindset that you're going to go into and do whatever you can to make it work.
Standards need to be well established. And you know, I don't think most people do that. Just most people don't have the background. They didn't perform at a high level and understand that standards are so vital to maintaining some level of performance.
Right.
And it's almost like New Year's resolutions. Yeah. Will, did you have New Year's resolutions? No. Just none. Too much to do. But most people that do is like, hey, I want to lose weight. Well, how much weight?
Right.
What's your plan?
Yeah.
Do you have milestones?
Right.
Because if you want to lose 60 pounds and it takes you 5 days to lose one, most people are just going to give in and quit.
Yeah.
It seems like we're lowering the bar across culture. And this isn't a political podcast. It just seems like a lot of people are living without standards.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, raising three kiddos. So I got a 21, 19, and 15-year-old right now. And I'm constantly talking to them about, man, what are you wanting to achieve? Where are you wanting to go? And ultimately setting up the habits so you ultimately get there, right? Sounds simple, hard to put in practice. And so I think when you start talking about standards, I think a lot of times we have expectations, which I wish we just get word of that word, because expectations are like a non-communicated standard. And so it's like, man, let's communicate what the standard is. And then that way we know. That way we know. So then you either hit it or you don't.
Or renegotiate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So as a co-captain, let me ask you this. That there must have been some difficult balancing there with friends. What did you learn in that role? Because I'm sure you were friends with almost all the players. And then all of a sudden you've got to, you know, put that friendship aside. Just like Peyton said to you, hey, if you don't catch this, I'm not going to throw to you again. Yeah. Did you damage some relationships along the way, or were some relationships not as strong because you had to hold a line as a fellow player, but yet co-captain?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know if they were, I wouldn't call them damaged. I would, I would call them, you know, at the end of the day, we're there to reach a goal. And if we can reach and we're friends. Yeah, we're friends, but, the goal is first. And I'll use this, my business partner, a guy named Dan Murphy, West Pointer.
Hate him already.
Yeah, I know. You know, we've been together, we've been working together now for 18 years, you know, had three different exits together, and we could have gone our separate ways and done different things. But I think one of the things, the reason we've stuck it out is not just because of the friendship, it's because of the agreements and then the friendship. It's like, man, then I love showing up to work because my buddy's there. You know, that's kind of like a secondary benefit.
You guys ever gotten into it?
Yeah, we gotten into it.
Don't talk for a day, come back, say, yeah. Asshole. Asshole. We good? Yeah, we're good.
We gotten into it a few times. It's more he gets pissed at me because I go too fast. Sometimes I get going and I don't even think.
Go before you're ready. Hey, I've got a good mentor that says that, go before you're ready. I'm like, that's not always not always a wise choice.
We go snowboarding a lot, and I always jump before looking. And he's like, you know, that's dumb. Man, that's my fullback in me. Like, I want to just feel the adrenaline going. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going.
It's very Shane McConkey of you, if you know who Shane McConkey is.
I know who he is.
Guy was crazy.
Hopefully I don't keep pushing it like that. I'm getting older now. I don't think I'm going to keep pushing it.
Yeah, he was taken in his prime. Yeah. Have you ever seen that documentary?
Oh, man, it's great.
Dude, that guy was an athlete.
He was a great athlete.
In a different way.
Great athlete.
Yeah. But definitely,
yeah.
He was missing a risk mitigation or risk assessment sort of thought process, or maybe his brain just operated differently.
I just think he kept wanting to push it. We all do, right? I think a lot of driven, depends on your personality type, but I mean, I think most type A's want to keep driving, want to grow. Like, growth is a human need. But sometimes when you're growing at a pace of adrenaline, it's like, how do you accomplish more adrenaline? You know what you do? You jump out of a helicopter above Mount Everest.
So this is causing, I don't want to say strife in the marriage. Let me throw this at you, and let me know if you find this sort of hits home. I love stretching for lofty goals. I love it. But I've found, and I think the journey is much more informative and important than actually reaching the destination. We all learn more in the journey, but I have come to find that when we do reach a goal, it's like 1 minute of like, oh, okay, that was cool. What's next?
Yeah.
You sort of have that same mentality?
Absolutely.
I don't think that's totally healthy.
Absolutely. Why do you think it's not healthy? I'd love to hear that.
Because it's just, you never stop.
Right.
It's literally, we did the 777, we pulled that off, and it was, you know, I look back at the boys and I'm like, that's what it's about right there. Screw the world records. Nobody cares about those. We literally don't. But it's just like, on to the next thing. And for those that are married to us, that's aggravating. I can empathize a little to be like, yeah, I'm not easy to be married to.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think one of the things that I've found just kind of, you know, through my marriage and raising kids and building the business is having a pause once you reach a goal to enjoy it, to celebrate it. But then I do think the way God wired us is to keep going and find out what that new next thing is. And that's what I want for my kids. I don't want them to reach something and be like, I'm done. But I'm just going to sit here and do nothing.
I think, here again, these are my perspective. I think 90% of human beings are wired. I think so when you get into psychology, I think psychology is lazy. And what I mean by that is people will always seek shortcuts or the path of least resistance. And we know that never works out. Hacks and shortcuts are a complete and utter waste of time. But as we get older, I think some people are just wired to resist change. And when you resist change, that means I'm done evolving. And we saw this even in the SEAL teams. You'd have that old crusty, what we call a master chief, the most senior enlisted.
Yeah.
We'll say the term, and we had an appalling reaction to this term, is this is the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And everyone would be like, yeah, well, if that's no longer relevant because the enemy's doing X and they've found a way to circumvent us, then we have to change as well. But I found that a lot of human beings, I mean, even look at, our parents, you know, my dad resisted social media for the longest time. And I think it was my sister that set him up on Facebook. And now he does keep up with friends. But I think a lot of human beings are just wired to want things to stay the same.
Yeah, at a certain age, I think that does start to happen. I mean, it hasn't fully happened to me yet. I'm 45, so it could start happening soon. But I mean, I think I also, you know, there's a security, another human need, which is security. I don't want to get killed, right? And so it's like, I don't want to go learn the new tech thing. I don't want to do that because that's not where I'm wanting to grow. Mm. I would say a lot of those people that are like resisting, so it's like, hey, I want to grow in a different way. I want to grow in meditation and not be connected good. To technology, yeah. Which is a good thing. And so that's what's so amazing about the human experience. Like, we're all not driven by the one thing. Mm. And I think especially in this day and age, there's more money. It's more about experience, entertainment. I'll use entertainment. And I just think, like, once we get to a certain level, there's certain things that become more important than others, right? So you can put one thing aside and go, hey, I'm not going to do technology. I'm going to go focus on this.
Which, from a mental and spiritual standpoint, is absolutely healthy. I like to say I'm in adventure capital. And I said that to a venture capital capitalist, and he did not find that funny. And I'm like, oh, it was a joke, man. No. So, D1 sports training started in 2001.
That's correct.
I'm assuming, when did you leave the NFL?
2001.
2001.
In abruptly.
How many knee injuries?
I ended up having 5 total knee surgeries.
On the same knee or both?
On both. 3 on one, 2 on the other. But yeah, the ACL was the last one when I was with the Denver Broncos.
Did somebody have to tap you out? Say, well, you're just done, man. Or did you come to the realization?
Yeah, so blew my knee out, moved back to Nashville. That's when I started the business. Opened my first gym, and it was just like a side hobby. And my cousin did the logo.
Same logo. No kidding.
And started the business thinking, man, this is a great thing to give back to my community. This is what I wanted when I was in middle school and high school. I wanted like great coaches to be motivated and tell me what to do and tell me how to get, reach a goal. And, went back to the NFL after I rehabbed and I failed my physical. And that was kind of they came to me and they said I could go to back then they had NFL Europe. And when I failed my physical, they said you can have surgery again, get it cleaned up, go to NFL Europe in 4 months. And we'll see how you do in NFL Europe if we invite you back to camp. And I was like, man, I had just had my daughter. I had started this business and I was like, I'm just going to go all in on the business. And I was a free agent fullback. Mm-hmm. Coming out, I was rated, but my knee, I had a lot of knee issues in high school as well. I had my first knee surgery in high school. And so, when they found that at the NFL combine, I fell off the draft board.
So you just powered through a lot of injuries in college.
Powered through a lot of injuries. Yeah, I'm a fullback, baby. We don't think about injuries. Just go.
I heard you talk about the mentality of a fullback as it relates to business. What is it specific about a fullback in your sort of definition?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it a little bit ago with a couple of these points, which is, I think to play the position, you really have to have a servant's mentality. It's not about you, right?
Unless you're carrying the ball.
Very rarely. But yeah. I mean, I think you have like, hey, I'm there to block for my teammate. I got to be in the right spot at the right time. you know, fullback has to know a lot of the offense because you play in different positions. I played receiver. I played like a hybrid tight end. I played tailback, you know, in certain sets. And so
protecting the quarterback.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I just think that mentality of like, hey, I have to be smart, be in it. But then I got, you know, I was proud of myself. I wanted to be the toughest guy on the field. I wanted to be the dude nobody wanted to go against.
They usually are.
You know, back then we had the big neck collar.
Just the days of Tom Rathman. That's what I remember growing up.
That's right. Mike Allstott, the A-train. Yeah, I mean, that's the way I love to play the position, which is, you know, aggressive, tough, and, you know, always getting after it. And that's the way I like to run the business, which is, hey, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to be tough. We're going to be smart. We're going to make smart decisions. And you know, but at the end of the day, I'm here to help everyone else reach their goal. Because if all of you reach your goal, I will reach my goal for sure.
Yes. That's a great customer approach. Always put the client first is what we say here.
Yeah.
If the client's happy, it brings on more business and then usually repeatability from that client as well.
That's right.
Customer service is everything, and I don't think a lot of businesses understand that. Ultimately, you know, especially with the advent of social media, everyone is a fitness influencer.
Right.
What in your opinion, differentiates D1 sports training from others? And I'm saying we're not going to downgrade other companies, but what do you think your differentiator is within that the sort of health and fitness space?
Yeah, I mean, so if any athlete walks in, this is my hope. We have 100 plus locations open. My hope is when you walk in the door is that you get inspired and motivated to reach your goal. Because I really think great coaching is inspiring and motivating people and pulling that, you know, getting that extra out of them so they can reach their goal. And we have so many athletes across the country that are reaching their goals right now. And their goal might not be to play Division One. I mean, it might be, hey, I want to do 20 push-ups. I don't want to get laughed at when I'm in, you know, soccer practice. And so, you know, for me, like when I walk in, I'm like, that is why we are here, is to inspire and motivate people to reach their goal. Now, how do we do that? You know, we do that with great training facilities. You know, we have turf, racks, we use Sornex equipment.
Great company.
Yeah. Great company. You know, we do it through, you know, group training, you know, semi-private training or one-on-one training. You know, and at the end of the day, what we do, we just train people. I mean, we work people out and help them reach their goal. And so all our locations, when athletes walk in, and when I say an athlete, it's really isn't anybody who's dedicated to their sport or fitness. It's not, it doesn't have to be, once again, the kid that's going D1. It could be the, you know, my wife who's trying to feel good, look good, and, you know, be inspired. And so when you come in there, that's what we want you to be, inspired and motivated.
So you're taking time with each client to say, hey, what are your goals? Let's get these in helping them put down very concrete goals.
That's right.
Yeah. The more concrete your goal is, the higher the probability of hitting that bullseye.
That's it. And because at the end of the day, I do know that is why some people train for just the experience. And I know there's, like, when I'm on vacation, it's like, I just need to, like, feel decent, like I'm sweating a little bit. But at the end of the day, I think people that come day in, day out, they want to reach something. They're there for a reason. I'm not just there to, like, burn calories. And there's smarter ways to reach your fitness goals than just, you know, running on a treadmill. And so I'm a big believer in what happened to me at a D1 college and what's happening to all these athletes around the country right now that are playing D1 sports. I get to watch my daughter and my son do this. They go in there and they've trained in these environments with other motivated athletes and these coaches that know how to coach them and follow a set rep scheme, follow a periodization program. And then all of a sudden they're a different human. They're a different person. And it's not just physical.
Again, what you learn along the way of doing those workouts under good trainers who are coaches and mentors, I mean, that's, we're a product of our mentors, without a doubt. I'm a product of every coach and mentor I had within the military. Just
that's it.
Crammed together and spit out. But in terms of standards for your trainers, Do you guys have a standard sort of protocol training that they go through, to the methodology to follow?
We do. We have a D1 certification. So they go through that and learn how to become a D1 coach. We do require all our coaches to have an outside accredited certification to learn some of the basics. But when it comes to the D1, it's more about how we do things.
The program, the periodization.
That's correct. It's more about, and then also how we deliver that style of a D1 workout. Because that, once again, to go back to, I want you to be inspired and motivated. It's not just about how you having the perfect workout program. It's like, man, when I walked into the weight room in college, man, I got fired up. Like, I was ready to go. Like, I was like, man, I'm kind of like nervous the night before, what's going to happen? And then when you start reaching those goals, they're like, man, that's ultimately why I built the business, is because my life was transformed. And it was like, that's what I want to do. I want to give that ability for every kid in small town USA to reach, you know, have someone, have a place, have a brand they trust that they can go and they can train like that.
First off, NCAA, especially football gyms, are phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then when I go visit NFL teams, they're not as nice.
No. They're getting better.
They're getting NFL's better. NFL's getting better. I mean, there's just so much money behind universities with the endowments and boosters. It's that's a pretty funny reality. So eventually you guys made the decision in 2018 to franchise.
That's right.
What was the sort of reasoning behind that decision?
Yeah. So, I mean, without going, I'll give you the 30-second Reader's Digest. I built the business as a corporate-owned locations. We would partner with some celebrity athletes. We would manage the locations, and we would also own the real estate. So I own 32 corporate gyms. I also built a physical therapy business underneath that, where we bill insurance and we manage.
Within the D1s?
Yeah, they were within D1s and outside of the D1s.
No kidding.
Yeah, and so I kind of had three different businesses, like a classic entrepreneur, probably too much. Like, yeah, I didn't know. Right. Like, I just, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. Really, you know, as I learned and got smarter, it's like, hey, there's better ways to do things. There's better ways to set things up. And in 2015, 16 timeframe is when we started selling off the real estate and transitioning to a franchise system, because we would do sale leasebacks. And in 2017, we sold the therapy business. And then in 2018, it was like, well, 2017, there was a good part of the year was like, hey, what do I want to do? Like, do I still love this? Should I get out? And I did get out for a little bit, which was really great for my head. It was like, hey, you know, do I really have a passion for this? Do I have the energy and the drive? Because I've been doing it for a while. And, you know, I'd seen some ups and downs. I'd made some bad mistakes. And I was like, oh, am I gonna, you know.
Sounded really good in your head.
Yeah.
That's the story of my life.
And then in 2017, we kind of repackaged the business and gone, hey, we're going to shrink the footprint. We're going to get just the necessities in there to make for the athletes. We're going to really optimize the scheduling, you know, part of the business. We're going to optimize the pricing. We're going to optimize this. And so in 2018, we started franchising. And it was it's an interesting thing to go from corporate owned to franchise after you've been in it 20 something years. It's my why now is, you know, is like to inspire and motivate entrepreneurs to own their own businesses. I call them entrepreneur athletes. You know, I want to inspire them to reach their goals. I've had the ability to, you know, I worked for the Denver Broncos for just a short minute. And, but since then I've been working for myself. And so, I want to be able to give that to these amazing people out there. There's so many great, you know, fitness people. There's so many great people who are like, man, if they had the business model, they could crush it. And, that's what I want to do. I want to give that to everybody.
And because of that decision, how many locations did you guys grow?
So since then, so we converted about 20 something, 23 of them. So, you know, we've added 80 something over the past couple of years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Was it also the desire to see D1 grow? beyond what yeah. whatever capital you had at the time to.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happens is like you get really excited to see your dream carried out through another owner. And that's why I really believe in franchising, because it empowers the owner. They own the business. Now they're given a playbook. They're giving all the supports, all the stuff that I had to, I had no idea in my 20s, you know, that I didn't know how to set up. I mean, we're setting everything up for them, supporting them. And that's ultimately the dream for me, is like empowering entrepreneurs to go change, you know, their family trajectory and live on their own terms and have a great business model. And I think we have a unique proposition. It's not, you know, I talk about the why, but just real practically, I mean, it's like 61% of our revenue comes from scholastics. So high school, middle school kids. Where most of the fitness industry is, you know, I mean, they might get 10% from that or 8%. And so we have this just, man, we really resonate with a lot of scholastic athletes out there, and they need a place to go train.
That would sound like it's your primary market. I mean, college guys, I mean, with the level of programs now for D1 athletes, well, I'm always thinking football.
Yeah.
But thinking back to high school, we didn't have anything. We went to a prep school
right.
that had a pretty good endowment. We still didn't have great trainers. We didn't have that. We didn't have design programs per athlete. It seems like the logical market, especially for parents who want to see their kids excel within sports in high school.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think even with great schools that have great strength and conditioning programs,
it's one or two people for a team.
Yeah, I mean, you got 500 kids in the school. It's like, man, how many can one or two people, you know, train? And so, you know, we just really, really see it right now where, man, there's so many athletes out there that need this. And I hit on it just a minute ago, but I'll just emphasize this, because I know this is big with, I know who you are and the way you carry yourself, just the way this place is and here is. I don't want athletes just to reach a physical goal. Hit 225 10 times or whatever, right? I ran a 40-yard dash at, 4.6. I mean, those things are great. But if that's all we did, we'd be missing the point. What really happened to me in college was my character got changed. I learned discipline. I learned respect. I learned perseverance, because when you have a tough squat day, you learn perseverance. And those are the things that I want to teach. Those are the things that I want in every D1 to happen to these athletes. Because when my son comes home and he's more respectful to me because he's been taking instruction from a great coach, man, it's priceless. And so that's what we're trying to put in every city, and you know, in the U.S. I want like every city for athletes can go and get coaches that are around them that are going to give them that D1 character.
You know, it's funny you say that with kids. It's fun. I call it the third party effect. You're probably saying everything that the coach is saying. But then they go hear it from the coach and they're like, "Hey, Dad, this is what I should." You're like, "What the hell? I've been telling you that since you're five." It was when I went to Marine Corps, my old man, great dude, hard as nails. Yeah. And he was actually on the high school championship team in San Francisco, St. Ignatius, back in like 57. And, 60s. But his claim to fame was that O.J. Simpson ran over him. I guess O.J. Simpson was from San Francisco as well. But I go to Marine Corps boot camp, excel. I'm the honor man out of like 300 kids. I'm the number one. And it was at the end of boot camp. And I was going to say something to my dad. And I'm like, oh, everything I just learned here, he's been trying to teach me. I just didn't have the ears open at all. And I didn't want to listen to him.
Yeah.
But I mean, you grew up under a father who was West Point, Vietnam veteran. I'm sure he laid the foundation and just something clicked when you're in college with somebody else saying it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times we hear our parents, but sometimes it needs to be reinforced by life. Yeah. And so I think the gym is a great safe. I mean, I'm going to use the word safe because I think we need to put controlled environments around our kids so they can learn and they can make mistakes, you know? You know, you can fall when you're doing a back pedal and like be okay. It's okay.
In a controlled environment.
And it's a controlled environment. And so I think it's really important for kids to do that. And I'll even go adults. Like adults need to have that. But then also know like, hey, when I'm in here, it's not just about how like being the best, being on the leaderboard, even though I know you're the guy on the leaderboard and I was the guy on the leaderboard. I want to be on there, but it's not just about that. It's about showing up day in, day out. It's about the effort. It's about the journey that you were talking about earlier, which is, you know, really important, and learning that like, man, that is, that's how you accomplish great things in life. That's how you continue to grow.
So you guys have, I mean, one, you were one of the fastest growing fitness companies in the U.S. By all means, you've defied odds. I can't even imagine this journey from 2001 to now, starting from scratch. It's amazing what you've built. Where do you guys go from here? Without giving away any corporate secrets.
No, I mean, I think we are hyper focused on serving the athlete. And when I say that, it's like I'm constantly looking at, okay, what are the best things to serve athletes? You know, I use podcasts. Like what is the best who should we tell them to be listening to? What should we be wearing? What supplements? What all the things that go around being an athlete? That's what we want to be. We want to be the place for the athlete. And so that's where we're going, is anything that involves. That's what I want to be a part of.
With technology, how much does that change the game? Is it just like a constant capital expenditure to stay up with the technology, the latest and greatest?
We are not super tech savvy. We should be more. We were talking about it right before the podcast. I mean, I think, one, you know, the strength coaches that really shaped me, you know, they would like laugh at me if I were to ever like be like, hey, I actually texted one of he's a legendary strength coach. And I was like, hey, what workout app do you guys use? And he laughed. He said, a pen and a paper. So, you know, for me, I think technology is great. Obviously, I'm wearing the Whoop here. I got several other, things we're looking at. And so I think for us, it's all about what is happening at the college level.
Yeah,
that's what's really cool about us, is because we get all our great ideas from all these D1 schools. They're spending all this money on weight rooms and coaches and doing the latest and greatest. And we're able to go in. We have amazing advisors that give us kind of the insights of the latest, greatest.
Hey, check this out.
Yeah, check this out.
Whoop is a great company. So is Aura.
Yeah.
I mean, they both have their sort of pros and cons.
Yeah.
But have you ever spoken with Dr. Kristen Holmes?
I have not. Whoop? No.
I'll connect you.
Yeah.
She is great. Yeah. She's the head of scientific research for Whoop.
Well, it's amazing. The Whoop and the Aura. My son wears the Aura. My daughter wears the Whoop. They are, in college, it's really interesting. They're getting all the athletes to wear them, and, you know,
sleep.
The coaches can monitor stuff. I don't know how much they're monitoring, but, you know, it's impactful. You know, I like to watch my kids and what they're doing. Make sure we get in bed at time.
That's why I put Apple tags and GPSs in all their. Oh man, it's tough to be a kid these days.
Yeah, it's
easy to. But they probably all know the workarounds.
Yeah,
my dad put a GPS in the car. I know how to disconnect it. Yeah. Good. Well, Will. Man, that's one hell of a story. Your resume reads like something out of an action book. Where can people find D1? I know you guys are also on some fitness apps. Like where can people get more involved with D1? Even if most of our listeners are not athletes, they're men in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s who just want to optimize themselves. Where can they find D1?
Yeah, go check out D1franchise.com. D1franchise.com. You can see everything. You know, you can go into all the different parts of our website and figure out all the stuff we're doing. And if anybody's out there, go check it out. You got to go work out. That's the one thing you got to do. Just go work out and enjoy your experience. And I hope it's a great one. And I hope it feels like a D1 school. you know, like, and brings you back, whether brings you back in those days.
You writing a book? You should be writing a book.
I don't know. My wife's got a book.
Does she?
My wife wrote a book. Yeah.
About?
It's called This Beautiful Mess.
Speaking about you?
Yeah. It's not beautiful. It's an ugly mess. That would be me.
Most great things are messes at the root of it.
Yeah.
But Will, thanks for joining us, man. Looking forward to writing the article on this again. And believe it or not, let me finish with this. I did look at D1 as potentially franchising. But this was awesome. Like in 2017.
It was right when we were getting going. Yeah.
Or 2018, right when I was about to retire.
Oh, and it just, awesome.
It wasn't the right move for me starting out. I probably would have fumbled. I've needed a few business failures under my belt to become a little wiser. But no, was looking forward to this, and congrats on everything, man.
Oh, thank you. Really appreciate it. Congrats on everything you're doing. Any way we can serve or help, just let us know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And for all the followers, thanks for following us, man. Go check out D1 Sports Training. Is it D1SportsTraining.com or D1?
D1Training.com and D1Franchise.com.
Okay. And if you're an entrepreneur, especially veterans, look, check it out, man. There's no better thing. We always galvanized around what we call PT, physical training.
Yeah.
Man, I couldn't think of a better segue for veterans. And you can find the capital. There's a lot of ways to find the capital to get into that model. But for our listeners, man, go leave a review on Google Podcasts. Is actually going away. Will knows that as well. We just got the notification. So Apple Podcast or Spotify, and follow us on YouTube at the Men's Journal YouTube channel. All right, guys. Thanks.